Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your Owlpost for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is every single week, the very patient, the wonderfully amazing Drea Kaufman.
The Microsoft despising Drea Kaufman.
Folks, y'all don't know. Y'all don't know how this episode is coming to you by the grace of God.
This episode almost didn't happen because we both almost rage quit all over everything.
Computers were almost thrown out windows. I mean,
fans were thrown in the air. Headphones weren't connected. It's been a real clusterfork of a night.
It's been crazy, but we are very glad to be here. And Drea, you know something that is going to bring a smile to your face is that we have two brand new reviews on iTunes that are 5 stars. So awesome. One says, a new Harry Potter experience, 5 stars. This is from Louis Spade. They said, listening to this podcast feels like reading the books for the first time. What a huge compliment, by the way. It provides a brand new experience with the series. I only wish I'd found it sooner. And then the second review says, love this podcast, 5 stars, Riverwild 84. I just started listening from the beginning of this podcast, and I'm halfway through the Chamber of Secrets episodes. Please keep making this show. I love it. Well, we are going to keep making this show because you know what, technologies? Screw you!
You can't keep me down, damn computer.
Apparently, we need Wizarding Wireless. Maybe that would make it easier.
I just need to buy an Apple. If only I wasn't also buying a house.
Well, you know, you're going to get the better end of the deal with the new house.
That's true. I feel like roof over my head, better functioning laptop.
Roof over your head's probably the better call. But we just want to say thank you for listening. Of course, you can find us all over the place wherever you get your podcasts. If you are on Apple Podcasts, just like those recent reviewers, hit us up with a star rating review. Let people know what you think of the show and help other fans find the show as well. Of course, you can also find us on Twitter at @JoinNerdParty. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. And we're online at TheNerdParty.com. If you'd like to send us an email, go over to TheNerdParty.com/contact, choose a show. Choose Owlpost, and that will come to Drea and I. Now, we are in Chapter 17, Educational Decree number 24, and I wrote to say I love the way this chapter starts because there's such a difference from the previous chapters because it actually starts out happy, which is awesome.
Yeah, unfortunately, it doesn't stay that way. Also, it had been a while since I read the last chapter, and I had to go back and reread why he was happy. Although it kind of gives you a summary there, but I kind of went back and read like the last paragraph of the last chapter, and then I was like, oh, okay, I have a lead in now. It does not last that way for long, though.
It doesn't. But the thing that I thought was really neat here is that I think she taps into something that's really important, which is that Harry is not only happy about Cho, but he's also happy about this idea that they're going to do something, you know, that knowing that they're actively doing something to resist Umbridge and the ministry changes things, changes the way he feels. And it's actually changed his outlook. And I think there's something really special about that, because what it taps into is this idea of belonging and the need for community and the need to feel needed. And Harry finally has all those things, because one of the big parts of this is that all of those people, they were all there. They were looking at him. They didn't think he was some kind of weird lying weirdo, you know, and they wanted to actually learn from him. So, I mean, that kind of perspective, it changes a lot for a person. And so to see that mood here, the happiness part isn't going to last through the rest of the chapter. But I think Harry's attitude, there's been a slight adjustment to it because of things starting to look up in other places.
It speaks to that human need we have for companionship, for acceptance, for like that human connection element. And, you know, he has that with, you know, his little Trinity, but it does speak to that larger, not everyone believes what's happening and what's being published, and not everyone believes he's nuts and that he made all this up. You know, it's nice to have, even if you are firm in your beliefs and you know you are right, there is something to be said about the relief that comes with someone else validating your feelings. So it is nice that she paints that and provides us that perspective as well. But unfortunately, we're not left with that happiness for all that long.
No, because the very next thing is the boys seeing this brand new educational decree that's come down from the High Inquisitor of Hogwarts, saying that every single student organization, society, team, group, or club has been disbanded.
Yeah, that everything got canceled. Just everything. Which, when you think about her role or what they've expressed her role being in terms of a better education, I don't understand how canceling every single club and team and group really fits within that like scope of her purview. But, you know, who am I? I'm not the High Inquisitor of Hogwarts.
Well, and this brings to mind for the boys immediately, oh no, does she know somehow? And I love, for the first time ever, they try to run up to Hermione's room and it turns into a slide, which they slide back down those stairs. And the girls come out and like, who's trying to get up here? Ron and Harry are like, just us. We want to talk to Hermione. And Hermione's like, guys, you can't come up here. That's not allowed. And she's like, it's an old-fashioned rule, but I guess they figured that, you know, boys were less trustworthy. And I just thought, that's so funny.
It's so old-fashioned, though, and I don't know how I feel about this. Every time I read this part, I sort of have mixed feelings because there's no reason for it. I mean, there's a part of you that's like, okay, good, you're protecting them a little bit more, but at the same time, like, why wouldn't you also protect the... Why wouldn't you just do the same thing for the boys? The girls can't go to the boys' rooms. Like, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. I don't really know what she's trying to do there. Like, I don't understand why that's included. And every time I read it, she's so thoughtful and diligent, and what she includes in this to me just doesn't, doesn't make a lot of sense.
It makes sense to me. I mean, I think, you know, when you think about the school being, you know, very, very old, right? So the thought process and just the standards for things were much different, you know, hundreds of years ago. And so the idea of, you know, not having boys be able to sneak into girls' dormitories makes a lot of sense, especially since they're more likely to do that, you know, at least that's what was believed then, than girls might, you know, and that girls would be more trustworthy on the other side. So I get it. I mean, it's definitely, I would say, something that holds to, you know, gender politics of an older age, but it makes sense why it's still there. I mean, this castle is hundreds and hundreds of years old. So, and the fact that it hasn't been changed makes that, you know. So, I mean, I think that's why she puts Hermione in there saying it's, you know, it's old fashioned, but that's just the way it is.
Yeah, I just don't understand her reasoning for including it. I don't see her doing anything with it. I mean, I'll be interested to see if she does something with it, but I just think about all the little details and things she includes that make you think, so there's something significant, and this, to me, just doesn't have any continued significance, so I don't really understand the point of its inclusion. Plus, it's just so old-fashioned that, I don't know, it's just confusing to me. So, I always have mixed feelings about this part. I don't particularly care for it. No one is really happy about the decree. Kind of like, I'm not happy about that.
It's true. And
although I feel like they're a little more unhappy than I am.
Well, yes. I think it's interesting because they start asking her, do you think somebody could have blabbed? Do you think somebody could have told on us? And Hermione's like, guys, I got this. Everybody that signed that parchment, if they said anything, we would know, because it would make Eloise Migden's acne look like a couple of cute freckles.
I do think that was funny that she basically she jinxed it.
Yeah.
So if anybody shared, then you know, they you would know. It's kind of the first time we're seeing that something like that exists.
Yeah, which is it's genius on Hermione's part. And I love that, you know, everybody's kind of coming up to them, you know, like as George and Fred and other people are we going to keep doing this? And Harry's like, of course we are. And they're like, what about the prefects? And Hermione just like gives them the like dead eye stare. Of course, you know, like it matters at this point. Like I'm the one who, this was my idea kind of thing, basically. You can see that she's not happy about them saying this to her.
Quite questioning her. Yeah. I mean, and it's interesting, too, because we've talked a little bit about the shift that Hermione has made. And if you think back to the first book and how often she sort of chastised them for, you know, you're not supposed to be here. It's in school rules, blah, 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 blah. And now there's this rule that she's not allowed to do exactly what she planned to do. And they ask her and she's like, well, of course I'm going to do it. Like there wasn't even a pause, there wasn't a hesitation, there wasn't any sort of like guilty or, you know, just her struggling to make a determination. She just was very, very definitive in her decision. She was very decisive, which is not always like her. So I always thought that was just a little interesting quirk too. Like they're just like, nope, that's, we're doing this. And you're like, okay.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those moments where it's kind of a growth moment, you know, like Hermione. There are some rules that are meant to be broken, right? Like this one. It's definitely meant to be broken. And we also find out that, you know, because Harry didn't even think of this, but Angelina reminds him, look, this is Quidditch too. Like, we have to try and get our Quidditch team restarted by asking her for permission, which means that you cannot cause any more problems with Umbridge.
Right? Zip it, kid. Zip it.
Which, I mean, he wants to play Quidditch too, but, you know, it's going to be interesting to see whether they'll get a chance to reform their team. And at this moment, you know, they go to their history of magic lesson, and an owl, Harry's owl, Hedwig, is at the window with a letter for him, and it turns out that she's injured, which, like, this, I'll admit, I totally forgot that this happened because it's something that's obviously not part of the movie whatsoever. And it's been a while since I've read the book. And so, like, this part, I was like, no, not Hedwig. Like, oh, it hurts my heart a little bit that Hedwig is hurt.
Yeah, it does. It is. And I do love, too, that they sort of remind you of how, like, innocent this little owl is. I mean, I think it's Lavender who says, like, ooh, I always thought that owl was really beautiful, right? Just speaking to sort of I always took that as like she was a very serene or graceful owl versus just pretty, you know? You know, there's kind of these grumblings of this owl that's admired. And then, you know, Harry fakes an illness to kind of go to her aid. And decides he's going to take her to Grubbly Plank, who's our, you know, stand in for Hagrid, and he ventures out there, and it's an interesting interchange what happens when he's on his way.
Yeah, this is really interesting because, you know, he's trying to get into the professor's room, and there are two stone gargoyles that guard that room, and they're like, what are you trying to do? He's like, I'm trying to get in here so I can talk to Professor Grubbly Plank, and he ends up running into Professor McGonagall. And she's like, what are you doing here? And she's like, it's urgent. And so she lets him in. And I love that Professor Grubbly Plank is sitting there smoking a pipe, holding a copy of the Daily Prophet. Like, she just seems like the coolest teacher ever. I just really like her. I wish we got to spend more time with her.
Well, she has an understated demure about her, right? Mm-hmm. And then she asks, like, oh, you know, first of all, she says something about Thestrals and that Thestrals, you know, sometimes attack owls, but the Thestrals at Hogwarts are pretty well trained. There's a good nod to Hagrid and him doing something right in that position, right? Like he has tamed them, and Harry doesn't really ask what a Thestral is or anything like that. And then she sort of asks, you know, where Hedwig is coming from, right, to deliver a message, and he says London, and you get the impression that she knows exactly where Hedwig came from, exactly what's going on without him having to say any more, you know, and McGonagall is actually the one that sort of picks up on it and shares some words of caution with Harry.
Yeah, I really, I loved this part because you get this picture that Professor Grubbly Plank is somebody who is well-versed in what's going on with the Dumbledore's army. You know, this Order of the Phoenix. And so I thought that was really cool that we get this inside moment where we see that she's a part of that. And then I love McGonagall being there too, because she's like, oh, Wilmina, before you take, you know, give us back the letter. And she reminds Harry to be very careful because any line of communication can be watched. And especially something...
I don't think she says can. I think she says is being watched.
Yes, yes. And of course, you know, Hedwig too is an owl that is very recognizable as well. And so something for Harry to keep in mind and be very careful with.
It's one of those unstated things that she doesn't say exactly what she wants to say, but she hopes that her warning is kind of cryptic enough that he can appreciate what she's meaning and not what she's saying.
Well, and we find out that this letter is from Sirius saying...
Snuffles!
Yay, Snuffles! Today, same time, same place, so the meeting to meet them, you know, at the fireplace so that they can have a conversation. And, you know, it... I hate Malfoy.
I don't feel like we say that enough.
Oh, we don't.
I just really hate Malfoy.
Because he starts laying into... the Gryffindors here about, you know, how, oh, they were able to get the Slytherin Quidditch team reinstated immediately. And, you know, it's probably because my father has all this, you know, influence of the ministry. And he says something derogatory about, you know, Arthur Weasley and being carted off to St. Mundungo's for, you know, being crazy. And Neville goes batshirt crazy trying to get to Malfoy, and the guys are having to hold him back. Harry's like holding him.
Harry's ready for it.
Yeah.
Harry knows what's coming, right? He anticipates something is going to happen with Neville, and when he sort of lunges for Malfoy, he's not surprised at all. He's like, I got this. You can't do this. Like, I you know, he's having this moment where he wants to sympathize but can't sympathize with Neville, at least not like verbally.
Well, and yeah, I really love this because Neville doesn't even know that Harry knows.
So Harry can't even say anything like, I get it, I understand, I appreciate how angry you are. He can't say any of that.
Yeah, but he does keep Neville from getting into more trouble. And of course, Snape is there to you know, hand them out some, you know, demerits, basically, by taking points away from Gryffindor, which is super frustrating. And then we get one of the best scenes in the book, which is you get Umbridge in potions grilling Snape. And this part is played just like the movie is. And all I can hear is the wonderful Alan Rickman saying... obviously, because it's just so great. And you know, he's like, why are you asking all these questions? And she's like, we want a thorough understanding of all the teachers' backgrounds. And so you just get this picture, like, what is really going on is she is testing the professors to see where their loyalties lie and how they're going to react. And it's very interesting here because her interaction with Snape is very different than her interaction with any of the other professors. In fact, I would say I got the feeling like she feels uncomfortable in this conversation, with Snape. And I did you feel that at all? Because this one just felt really different.
She seemed to tread a little more lightly here than maybe in some of the others. There's not quite the high horse pedestal feeling that she has. She seemed a little afraid of Snape in this situation. And she's very quick to go and solicit feedback from a student, which we've never seen her do before, versus her own assessment on the teacher, and, you know, kind of berating the teacher. It's like the first time that beyond McGonagall that the teacher didn't sort of bend back to her or didn't seem to be afraid of her. And so it's like, unlike with McGonagall, it's like she doesn't know what to do with it, but she's a little afraid of it, which is interesting.
Well, and of course, Snape is Snape, and he treats Harry very badly in class, giving him an extra essay to do.
Yeah, he definitely takes out this whole Umbridge situation on Harry. Yes. You know, he's like the whipping boy, the whipping post for Snape whenever he has a bad day. Where's Harry? Quick hide! Don't make eye contact!
Absolutely. And I think it's really interesting because Harry is like, well, maybe I'll just skip divination and I can do the essay now and I can get it over with. And Hermione's like, no, you can't skip divination. They're like, but you hate her. And she's like, yeah, but you already missed History of Magic. I don't think it's wise for you to miss an entire other class. And Harry's just like grumbling to himself because he can't deny that Hermione is right on this one. So he ends up in class with divination. And well, let's just say that he's not the only one who's kind of pissed in this class.
Yeah, it's really unusual because we see Trelawney being very dramatic kind of normally in sort of a hippie sort of fashion. I don't know how else to put it. In a very like, oh, dramatic fashion. She likes drama, not that she is like overly dramatic. And in this case, she is just on a warpath. Kind of throwing. I love the moment where she kind of throws the books at each table and she's like, go on, you know what to do, unless I didn't teach you well enough that you know how to open a book. She's just very, very, very upset.
She is very upset. And the thing I really appreciated about this was I liked being able to see the humanity of her. And you do really feel badly for her because we find out that she's been put on detention or she's been put on probation.
Notice, basically.
Yeah. And so you do feel bad for her. The boys are trying to get their homework done, though, in the common room. And Harry is just having a really hard time, especially since Fred and George are practicing with their skeeving snack boxes, which means that they take one side and they vomit profusely, and then they take the other side and stop vomiting. So it's this constant sound of vomiting and not vomiting, which, you know, I don't think I get a lot of homework done either with that sound.
Yeah, agreed. And we find that Quidditch is not approved yet. It's not denied, but it's not approved. And if anyone can give me a better summary of bureaucracy than not declined, but just pending, I challenge you to do so.
And it's classic, right? Like, I mean, you expect this. Obviously, you know, by the fact that the Slytherins already have their, you know, team reformed immediately, you see where the battle lines are here. And so, yeah, it is really interesting. And we get to have a conversation with Sirius as everybody else has left and he shows up. And Sirius knows all about their private meeting at the Hogshead, because who should have been there but Mudungus dressed as a woman, which is hysterical.
I love this, by the way. I love this. That he owes the bartender so much money that he has to go like incognito now to drink at that bar. But even more than that, I love Sirius, like, being very, very patronizing to Hermione. And she's like, but I went here because it was quiet. What do you want me to do? The three broomsticks? It's so loud. And he's like, oh, Hermione, you have so much to learn. It's harder to overhear when it's loud. Like, I just, It's not often that Hermione kind of makes the wrong call, and I just think it's so funny that he's just like, oh, Hermione, so much to learn still. And it's just like, oh, Sirius, you could have knifed in the heart a little bit harder there.
Yeah, you know, I think the thing that I really like about this, though, is that it is kind of important for Hermione to not to kind of learn these things. You know, Hermione's a rule follower, right? And so obviously you would expect that she would have a lot to learn about breaking the rules.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
You know, this is not her forte yet. And so I really appreciate that. We also find out that one of the reasons that, you know, it's been difficult, one, because Harry's still under surveillance, and two, the reason it's been difficult to do that is because they lost the spare invisibility cloak that Moody had when Sturgis was arrested. And then he's asked to pass along a message from Molly, which is that Ron should do no such thing as joining a group like this because he might get expelled. But Sirius is all about this, which I just, this whole conversation is just, it's really funny.
It really is. I love that the phrasing, and I can hear Molly saying it, is that she highly discourages Hermione and Harry from participating, though acknowledges she has no formal authority over them.
It's classic. It's classic Molly. I think it's really interesting because, you know, Sirius explains too why he is for this, and he has a very good reason. Look, the last year we wanted you to be careful because we knew somebody was trying to kill you, but we didn't know who it was. This year, we know exactly who's trying to kill you. Everybody is. So I would much rather you be able to fight and know how to protect yourself than not, because that's what's important now. Because there are so many enemies. And so I really appreciated this whole idea. They also start trying to throw around ideas of where that they should meet. And I thought this was fascinating as well, because they're having a hard time coming up with a place that they can do this and still kind of stay hidden, especially with what they have in mind, which is doing something that is now, quote unquote, illegal at school.
Yeah, it's so interesting how that line sort of gets blurred throughout this chapter between illegal and just not allowed at Hogwarts. Like, illegal to me means breaking the law, where something at Hogwarts would be breaking the rules, right? We're starting to blur that line a little bit. And those rules are becoming laws now, right? We've gone from just not going out of bounds to, you know, breaking something that is from the ministry and is law. So she's sort of gradually crossing that line, and I like how she's using the school to do that. And then we have this weird, and then Sirius kind of gets weird, right? He kind of just drastically stops talking.
And then a hand appears with some old-fashioned ugly rings, a very stubby, short-fingered hand, and the kids just scatter, realizing that who this is, and just hoping and praying that Sirius is okay. And that's where we leave the chapter. Like, talk about a cliffhanger.
Well, yeah, and talk about a warning we got from McGonagall earlier when she said that, you know, all of the communications in and out of Hogwarts are being monitored. Now we have confirmation that the flu network is also being monitored, not just for people traveling, but for any form of communication, right? That we kind of didn't even know was a thing until last year. And now apparently it's known enough to be monitored. So it's not quite as secret as we maybe thought.
It's interesting just how quickly things are getting very dangerous where we are. Like, and
at least they feel that way too, right? They feel very intense all of a sudden. And I think that kind of goes with that whole, like, rules versus laws, right? We get the impression that although we're still at school and she's just an authority figure at school, we get the impression that this means so much more than that. That there's so much more at stake than just the Hogwarts reputation or their school or their grades or, you know, what Molly's worried about getting expelled. There's so much more at stake here. Even if it's not sort of spelled out, you know, you worry about Sirius. We kind of know that one, but we just get this impression that everything based on McGonagall's reactions and all of that is just everything. There's so much more going on than we're aware of, which adds this like element of like of just tense, just tenseness to everything that's happening. And I think Umbridge reaching through the fire at midnight is probably a good sign of that, you know, that there's something much bigger at play than we're aware of.
Yeah, I call that tense. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maybe not the way you want to end, you know, before you go to bed.
No, I can't imagine that any of those
reaching out.
Any of those kids slept well that night after seeing that.
Especially because they can't confirm if Sirius is okay. Yeah. Right now, they're sort of just cut off from everything and everyone. And like, what are you going to do?
We got no outpost. We got no flu network. Our friends' heads are falling off, basically. Like, we don't know what happened.
We're not allowed to play Quidditch. We have to do extra potions homework.
Ugh.
I mean, things are just kind of...
This day is the worst. ...lay poo
all across the board.
This day is the worst. Well, that's where we leave it until we get to next week, which the next chapter is Dumbledore's Army. So I am looking forward to getting to that one. But before we do, Drea... where can everybody find you if they wanted to catch up with you and talk about Harry Potter or anything else that's going on?
Sure. You can find me on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, C-O-F-F-M-A-N, or on Twitter at PCFChick.
And you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd under the name MattRushing02. I am here on the network doing aggressive negotiations with John Mills talking about Star Wars each and every week. So much fun. In fact, last week we got to celebrate a year since Star Wars Rebels ended, which was a blast. So I hope you'll check that out. You can also find me over on the Trek FM Network talking about two different shows. One is The Orb with Chris Jones talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. The other is The 602 Club with Christy Morris as we dive into all of the different franchises that we love because there are so many. And then last but not least, you can find me on Cinema Stories with my good friend Courtney as we talk about films through the lens of faith. But we want to thank you for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.